This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swimmer.
1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
1 million rubles.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 41 for Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Gust, here to talk about episode 7. It was, I'm calling it the merge vote, it was a merge. I know Jeff's like, it's not a merge. They all voted together. I see it as the merge, but it was such a great episode and I enjoyed it thoroughly a lot more than last week. And we have such a fun guest to dissect messy votes, a lot of strategy that we're going to get into, big twists as well. So I'm really excited to talk about this with him. It is the great King George Miladinov. George, thank you for being here.
Hi, Shannon. And from one big merge vote episode player, I can't wait to absolutely dissect this one with you. And thanks for having me.
No, I'm so excited to talk about it with you. And I even said this on Twitter, like, between Survivor South Africa, Australian Survivor and 41, we have been blessed with merge votes this year. Three of the more epic merge votes that you can remember. And we got them all in the space of like 3 months. It's great.
This was a fun episode. I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan. I know I've read a lot about it on Twitter and whatnot in terms of how they split the two episodes, possibly unnecessarily. But this was just a great episode of Survivor. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And I guess the best thing you can say about how much I didn't enjoy last week was that like all my anger was out. So I got to just like, I felt like the twist barely even impacted this episode. Like obviously it changes up in the beginning. Erica makes the most shocking decision of all time, which no one thought you would do.
No, I know we're not talking about last week's episode, but the moment I hear the words come out of Jeff's mouth, you have the chance to turn back time. In my mind, I'm going, a player's going to get brought back into the camp. She's got all the power. She's going to choose who it is. And it's smash an hourglass and just save six people for no reason. It's like, oh, like there's no strategic element to it all. Of course she was going to smash the hourglass.
Well, that's something I wanted to say last week. Like last week we talked about how it was such an obvious decision and the decision was super imbalanced. And I just kind of like also wanted to reiterate, which I don't think I said last week, was like the show wants it to be imbalanced. Because then they'll manufacture the outcome that they want. They want the big moment, the slow-mo shot of her smashing the hourglass. And I feel like when I was listening to podcasts throughout the week that were trying to kind of make it a fairer choice, I was like, no, but that would actually maybe optimize the decision of her leaving things as they are. And the show would hate that. So it was imbalanced by design so that they could get the moment they wanted. They did. I thought it was pretty meh. And then we move forward with this. And I think that the only thing that really mattered with the twist was that five people were vulnerable out of 12, which we'll talk about because it's pretty similar to the Laura vote from your season. But the fact that everyone had changed over, it was super unfair. And it was definitely in the back of my mind. I was like, this is really unfair to these people. And Danny's talking about it. But I was like, it's not really affecting the action of this episode. And then I could kind of just enjoy the strategy I was seeing before me.
See, the only thing that I haven't put together was the actual timeline. So when Erica comes back from the challenge, announcement gets made, other six people are immune. Would they have immediately gone for a scramble and then to tribal? Because that possibly would have been a very short window to come up with a move. That's the only thing that I was thinking in my mind would have been a bit of a shock factor.
I think that is what it was, because Erica got the two nights on exile, I think, to really kind of draw all the suffering out of it. So they were, like, low on time, obviously, because it's such a short season. So, yeah, I mean, that was a big deal. And it was definitely, you know, not very fair to Sydney as well. Like Daddy said best, like, they won immunity. It got taken away, which is a very unfortunate thing. But, George, let's smash our own hourglass and go back in time a little bit more broadly, because I want to ask you, firstly, it's the first time we've heard from you since your deep dive. So how is post-survival life just hanging out and being King George out in the world?
Well, I'm happy and delighted to be out in the world, Shannon. So I live in New South Wales, where we have had our post-lockdown freedoms for about 3 weeks now, and I haven't missed the opportunity to go out to pubs, clubs, play poker, go out and have some fun in bars. I have met up with the entire Sydney Australian Survivor Season 6 crew. They came out to a cocktail bar in Bankstown for my birthday. That was a fun night. I've had lots of random dinner parties at Cara's house, and let me tell you, I thought she'd throw a good dinner party, and she absolutely does, Shannon. It's tomahawk steaks and rock lobsters on her barbecue, so that's always fun. And I've just enjoyed just, you know, I'm looking out the window now. It is a miserable raining day in Sydney, but I just enjoy the fact that life is almost back to normal again. So post-survivor, in terms of what have I been doing with myself, I've enjoyed the ride. Survivor for me, I said it before, and I'm still of the same mindset. It was like a dream come true opportunity. I was grateful for everything that happened. I love engaging with fans online, out in person. I get stopped every single day still, and I love having every conversation. And I just, you know, delighted to be back out and about, essentially.
Yeah, and a lot going on with the merch that I've seen that's been good, and the announcement that you're going to be on Talking Tribal. So this is a little bit of a preview for us doing Talking Tribal together next year. So yeah, the first of many, you know, chats we're going to have about Survivor.
So that's a missed opportunity there, Shannon. I do have merchandise, and if you're interested, please visit my Instagram.
Yeah, I helped you out with that one. That's what co-hosts do together. That's why we're going to work well on Talking Tribal.
Yeah, well, Talking Tribal is going to be fun. I can't wait for the next season of Australian Survivor, and I think Survivor matures and it gets better. I think season 41 has copped a lot of flack for pulling in a different direction, but the show needs to evolve, Shannon. We can't have the same mundane style seasons of the past, or the casual audience will switch off. The one thing I will say is I think the Australian domestic audience is very different to the US one. We have a very different social and political climate that might impact how the seasons get packaged up. And I think our productions might take a different twist on things. But I, broadly speaking, have really enjoyed season 41. Mm-hmm. I like the twists. I like the fact that it's a very short game and things are happening back to back to back. And I'm enjoying it for what it is. And then I tell myself, I would rather this than just no US Survivor at all.
No, I mean, that's true. Like, you know, I criticize the twists. And I criticize some of them, and I think there have been some missteps there, but I still love the season. As I've always said, 80% of the season is cast. I love this cast. I love this episode. I thought it was a highlight for sure. I'm definitely enjoying the season overall, and I thought that this episode particularly was a return to form. Who are you loving, like, from the cast? Who were standouts for you?
From episode one, for me, it's been Tiffany. I just saw Tiffany, and I'm thinking, this woman is fire. She's got that energy. She's just got that life in her. And when I saw her struggling on the balance beam, falling off, but yes, someone that's just a big personality and in control, I'm just like, I'm living for her. I'm really hoping she has a deep run. Looking at the numbers right now, she's kind of in a minority, but she's in control. And that's what gets me excited about her. I love Ricard from one villain to another. Maybe that's why I'm drawn to Ricard. Mm-hmm. I think he's very exciting. I feel like he might be a bit under-edited so far, but that's just my spidey sense as a Survivor player saying that. I don't know if it's particularly the case. Shan is obviously the main character of the show, mm-hmm. and for good reason. She is someone that has had a say in every single vote that she's been involved in, potentially some of the votes she hasn't been involved in terms of helping other players get advantages or leaking information and spreading it to build relationships and bridges, for instance, Liana. And they're the ones that kind of stand out for me so far. But overall with the cast, it's a great cast. They're interesting players. It's a good diverse mix. And then the thing is, everyone's a survivor player that has come with knowledge of the game and a passion to do well. There's nothing wrong with not having fans of the show on the cast. I think sometimes you need just non-survivor players just to bring that element of surprise from a production and TV angle. Obviously, it didn't work for me that well with some of the cast that I was grouped with. But this is a good cast overall.
I think the disparity in some of the casting was very clear here, because we've spoken a bit in the podcast before about how, like, they're playing so hard, and whether it's that they were, like, locked away for a year with COVID or something that you know about pretty well, or whether it's just the mix of personalities or the shorter game, just having everyone playing at 100 all the time. I felt that you could feel like the claustrophobia of it being five people vulnerable out of 12, and everyone was playing so hard in that. Evie, Deshaun at a point, Sydney playing her shot in the dark, were just working so hard for it to not be them, to the point where Deshaun is like sacrificing an ally, like things you need to do to survive this predicament. Whereas I felt like in the Laura vote, which I think was 4 out of 9, there were four people vulnerable. And they were pretty passive. Like, I didn't get that same level of panic, other than from you actually being the one active player to do it, and you were immune. So I think that you can be passive possibly if you are immune, because you're not on the chopping block. And if people are going to lead that by being passive while being vulnerable, as they did in your season, it can lead to everyone just kind of shrugging their shoulders until you came over the top of it with your move. Whereas I felt in this episode, you could really see the cast was playing so hard, because every single person that was vulnerable was just like, what are we doing about this? And their allies as well, even though they were immune, were really working very hard to get particular outcomes out of it.
Look, the one thing that, and I'm sure we'll delve into it more, Shan, the one thing that I can't quite put my finger on from this episode is why Nasir and Erica were kind of like floating around in the background. Surely they can read the room and see that the four players, Deshaun, Shan, Liana,
and Danny.
I'm forgetting Danny. But surely they can see that those four have pulled away in like a strong little clique that's speaking. And like you notice things when you're in camp. You notice who goes off together, when they're talking, why they're talking, how long they're talking for. And then if you're someone like me, you'll try and overhear the conversation and listen to what they're talking to. If I was Nasir and Erica, I would have just maybe tried to have taken a bit more control, where you're not at threat, but you can also have your say. It's kind of the same position that Kara and I were in, where whichever side we could have aligned with, we would have taken complete control and there was no need to show your hand. But in terms of the Laura vote, I think it was, and we touched on it on my deep dive, and I think even Hayley mentioned it in her deep dive, that happened so quickly, and that's why I kind of said at the start of the episode of this podcast, the Laura vote happened so quickly, where we were so, you know, caught off guard, not expecting five people to be immune, and then we have, you know, 1 hour max to work out what to do when we come back to camp. And there were kind of like circumstances at play. I had my advantage. No one knew about it. Everybody was just, you know, complacent with the group target. And I think here, because it was the Laura vote was not the first merge vote, but this was, and you had a group of, like you said, players going at 100 the whole time. It shapes the direction of the game. So we all saw what happened on Brains versus Brawn. I needed to shape the direction of the game. I took control. I factored in what people were most likely to do and why. I think Shan was very similar to that in this episode. I'm very impressed by how Shan has just taken Liana under her thumb. But it was an exciting finish. I mean, the one thing that I think back, Shannon, the one thing that I don't know why is, why didn't us Aussies walk around at tribal council? Mm-hmm. No one ever said you can't walk up and speak to someone at tribal. And here in US Survivor, it's just like, and they're off and they're having group conversations here, there, left, right. And it just tells me, hey, what a missed opportunity. But it was exciting. And like it kind of, if I was to take my one hot take out of this, it was a phenomenal outcome for Xander. Xander is sitting there and he's done the ballsiest move of the game so far. He has told Tiffany not to waste the idol. So his minority alliance still has an advantage. He's in control. There are some swing votes in the C and Erica who can drift back and forth if they see that block of fours too tight and too obvious in their gameplay. And then every single other advantage in the game has been played. Am I correct in saying that, Shannon? All the extra votes are gone. They were used. And only Nasir has his idol.
Shan has an idol and an extra vote as well. And then Xander has his extra vote and idol, assuming he gets it back, and Nasir has the idol still. So I do think Xander is in a good spot, and we'll definitely talk about it, because I thought he did a lot right with some small mistakes, but it all worked out. But yeah, in terms of the live tribal, like, usually for me, I'm rolling my eyes because I feel like it's just kind of talking for the sake of it, and I feel like not a lot really changes, whereas in this episode, it was exciting because there'd been a trigger, which had been them not being able to get the outcome they wanted and actually stealing the idol. So things actually, I thought, changed. And I don't think Sydney was the vote going into that tribal council. And I think that that really did count for the chaos. So I thought that was actually a really interesting and well-subtitled live tribal council. Whether you agree that they should be able to get up, which kind of nullifies some of the power of knowledge of power in the order of operations, because people can still kind of scramble around it. That's kind of your prerogative to decide. But I thought it was at least exciting and entertaining. And in terms of the dynamics for people like Erica and Nasir, I actually feel like, even though we know that it's kind of anchored by the camp out and they really are like this core four in the middle of it, I think it's quite easy to make it look like it's a bigger group that everyone's a part of. Like, the dynamics to me probably just look like, okay, Yasa with this middle group, they didn't have the numbers. We join Ua to Luvu as a big, broad group, and Liana has flipped maybe because of her connection with Shan particularly. But I don't know if the camp out are as apparent to people on the beaches, obviously they are to us who's seeing it in the edit. I actually feel like those dynamics broadly could make sense for the people there, but obviously they are being manipulated because we know the real structure of that.
Yeah, look, I there's a certain element in truthfulness to that, but I look back at what happened on my season of Survivor, and that's what kind of was replicated out on TV. So at no point was, if you play active enough, Shannon, if you have enough conversations with people, you can get to 90 to 95% certainty with what the alliances are, and then you've got to use your ability to negotiate and influence an outcome. So it was very clear going to that tribal, particularly after the failed knowledge is power steal by Liana, that Deshaun started targeting Sydney. So what I tell myself, what could an alternate action have been that would have been equally beneficial to everyone? When I think with Sydney, like, She was in a bit of a tough one. Would I have used my shot in the dark if I was her? I probably would. I probably would have. But they could have done more to pull over Nasir and Erica. That was the kind of real question mark in my mind. And the one person that was really invisible in this episode, to the extent where I actually forgot that she was in it, was Heather. So she's not in the core four. She got no airtime, which might mean something completely different. But it's like, why didn't they try and petition her? Or is there some kind of, like, I think beef, which is a prelude to the next episode that might happen. We saw it in the preview. But yeah, it was a difficult one. But like, Deshaun being aware of the consequence of the failed advantage from Liana was very impressive from my mind.
Yeah, I thought Deshaun was amazing in this episode. Like, I feel it was the worst possible group to be vulnerable for Deshaun, because it's himself, Danny and Sydney, who we've seen as his main alliance, Nasir, who he has been working with probably just beyond that, so that's like his top four with himself, of just from Luvu, and Nasir has an idol. And then it's Evie, who could be protected by an idol, who's his one external connection that he made on Shipwheel Island. Like, even voting out Evie was a concession. It probably was like the four people and himself that he least wanted to be vulnerable once Ricard had won immunity. It was such a tough spot. And he just impressed me so much in this episode. Like, the killer instinct to to even put Sydney's name out there and kind of start that both before Tribal and at Tribal Council, I thought was just lethal and necessary. And I just thought it was such a hard spot for him to make it through this as a threat, as someone without an idol in this extremely constricted group. And he does get through it. And I thought, like, things like throwing out the information from Shippuku Island to Xander, like, we can talk about if that had any impact. But he just had, like, such a killer instinct to be like, I am not letting this twist. And we saw him kind of cracking with how much the twist was impacting his game. He was like, I am not letting this twist take me down. And I think he worked extremely hard to get out of the situation.
He did. And the moral of the story is you always need to have plan A, plan B, and plan C. And Deshaun had that. Plan A was send Evie packing. Plan B was get the alternate option up in case something goes wrong. That's what worked for me really well. And I'm glad to see that now Deshaun is kind of coming out of the fall. But keeping in mind, this was also his first tribal council. First tribal council were the six members of that tribe. And sometimes you do need to get, you know, a few runs under your belt to get the ship moving in the right direction.
Yeah, he really got thrown into the fire for his first tribal council. And even Shan was like trying to teach him what like tribal council was about. She's like, no, this is just like the pre-tribal paranoia because I've like played a whole game and you're just getting to tribal council. And then ironically was actually wrong. His read on that was correct. But I felt like Deshaun is really at the center of whatever it is in terms of like the camp out or this like bigger majority that they're selling to people and using as numbers. Like, he's really in the middle of that.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But then I wanted to ask you, George, as the king of split votes, what happened here? Was it pure chaos? Because how does Sydney become the primary? It doesn't make any sense to me. Because if they wanted Sydney out, if Sydney was going to be the primary, they would have needed no scramble. It's something that they could have done before Tribal Council, split the vote. And then, obviously, that's something we see them coming up with at Tribal Council. So it's a new plan. But you would think, okay, we split the vote on Evie to get out our main target. And if it doesn't work and the idol is played, Sydney goes home. And I'm putting it down to pure chaos that Sydney becomes the primary target here.
Look, it is, but the one thing that I don't understand why it happened is why did Liana play her advantage at the time that she did?
That's my understanding. It said before the votes are cast, which I feel like is like a broad time now because then the votes aren't cast. We had like a whole new tribal council
correct
after that, but it did say that in the note.
Okay, but I was thinking she could have waited a bit longer. One thing that I can't work out is why didn't they just agree to the split vote beforehand? I think what the antics at Tribal indicated from my perspective was that Nasi still is a bit in the middle of the camp. Like if you saw, he went to the Minority Alliance when started talking to each other, and you had Deshaun, I think, saying, Nasi, come over here, come and speak with us. So they really left it, not necessarily to chance, but they left it really, really late, and they enabled Nasi to have doubt. They're fortunate that he didn't go the other way. In saying that, you could have had maybe Tiffany, Xander, and Sydney put a bit more emphasis on Nasir not voting with the majority alliance. But if you have the ability to split, and they did with Deshaun's extra vote, and Shan had an extra vote as well, of course you take the opportunity to split. If there's a guaranteed outcome, you take it.
Yeah, I think that I actually like Deshaun voting for Evie twice with the extra vote that Evie gave him many moons ago, because I just felt like this was so chaotic and you don't know which numbers are where. Someone like Nasir, who seems between the groups, I think that you have to as well split. This is something I've been wanting to say. Like, you have to split based on the maximum the minority can vote for. Don't be like counting on someone taking their shot in the dark and losing votes. Like, you have to split as if the minority are going to use their maximum amount of votes. So to just pile on in the chaos when you don't know if they're going to use extra votes. You don't know that Sydney said maybe they thought Erica had lost her vote for getting such a huge power, which actually maybe would have made a lot of sense. Like, they don't know exactly who has votes and who's necessarily voting with them, and then who's voting and how many votes the other side has. So I think piling on in the chaos was something else I really liked with Deshaun, even though it did mean the extra vote got wasted, but it is a useless advantage. Like, you do the best that you can with it. I thought that that was really good. I just feel like the chaos of the split vote led to Sydney going home. We saw kind of in the subtitle talks, Danny's asking to switch it, I assume not wanting to vote for Sydney out of their relationship. I just think that it was a difficult one in the moment to be like, but how many votes do we have on each person, when that's already such a contentious thing and it's so late in the game and we're at tribal council. And I think, like, poor Sydney probably did get a little screwed just by the chaos of that and being the primary, and also just by being like the one person of this five who, yes, like she, if she'd won the battle of relationships and power in the way that Deshaun and to an extent Danny did as well, she would still be in the game. But I feel bad for Sydney because she seemed to be between the two alliances and really working with both, but she wasn't a priority to either. And that's why she kind of gets sacrificed here when she wasn't doing a lot wrong. It was just a very constricted vote for her and she got immunity taken away.
Look, the one thing that I was thinking about during that tribal council is, did Sydney know that the real idol was with Tiffany? Because if she did, she perhaps could have let Liana have known. I'm assuming that she didn't.
Yeah, I don't think she did. Because even at tribal council, she's asking, like, do you have a real idol? So I don't think she was fully in the know with it.
So the only way that Sydney could have changed the outcome, because I like to think rather than just automatically going, oh, the player was screwed, what realistic options were available to Sydney after the chaos had unfolded? She, hypothetically, she could have voted for Evie. She still goes in the revote. So that's not particularly the option.
I think Evie would have gone in the revote. I just think it's very
you
unlikely.
Think so?
Well, yes, because I think that she became the primary due to chaos. I think if they're like, oh, Evie didn't get the idol played on them, and like we've somehow gotten through with this where Evie is vulnerable, I think they're taking that shot. I just think that Sydney was regretting playing the shot in the dark in her final words, but I don't think that she's ever realistically voting for Evie. So it's just not something that would have happened. But had in some world she does that, like, yeah, I do think that they probably vote out Evie.
See, the only other way that I could have seen Sydney having an influence on the vote was convincing Xander to play his extra vote, and then she doesn't play the shot in the dark, and then Deshaun should go, unless my maths are wrong.
Well, then that would have given them five, which would have tied it up. But then again, you don't know how they're splitting, and then you lose on the revote. They would have needed Nasir and the extra vote and Sydney playing it and, like, yeah, and I don't think that was ever happened. I don't know if it was a realistic possibility. I think it's a tough one because I think as well, like, if Nasir doesn't have the idol, it's every possibility that he gets sacrificed as a contingency plan. I just think that Deshaun was very, like, he was really crossing his T's and dotting his I's to making vulnerable people, pushing them ahead of him, rather than like, okay, well, Evie might be safe, so let's do Nasir, who also might be safe. Like, let's just do the clean shot at Sydney as a third option, which I thought was really salient from him, but just like a bit of an unfortunate position for Sydney. But again, like, had she made the move Deshaun had made and had she been the one to be able to rally those numbers, like, she
had
would
she
still
been
be
proactive.
There.
Correct. So yeah. There's the failure of Sydney. For someone as brash and brazen and bold as she's been in her exit media, she really didn't do much after the immunity challenge and before tribal council to guarantee that she wasn't the backup.
Yeah, I agree. And she didn't have the social capital, I think, to pull it off. Again, like, relationships that were forming, but not anyone's main priority. And I think that that becomes really tricky for her. So I want to talk as well about Xander and Liana and this kind of bluff battle that they're having with the idol and the advantage, because it took me a while. It was very much that Friends episode of, like, They don't know that we know they know we know. And I was trying to work it back all the layers to be like, who has the information advantage here? And I think if you bear with me, I think I get where it's gone, which is that Xander and Yasa don't know, as far as I'm aware, that Lyanna knows that they know about the advantage and that she kept the advantage from them. So obviously they know about the advantage and they know that she did that. She knows now because of Danny, because Xander told Danny that they know about it, but they never found out that she knew about that, as far as I'm aware. Whether they could reasonably, you know, predict that, I'm not so sure, but I don't think they knew about that. So Lyanna has an information advantage here where she knows that they're bluffing. She knows that they're acting all friendly, but actually they're aware that she's betrayed them. They're aware that there's an advantage she could use against them. So for me, and I don't know if you saw it the same way, but when someone's coming to you and putting an idol in their pants and Evie saying to you like, oh, it's all going to be good, and they're telling you things to your face, but you know that they're not telling you things, that you know that they're not telling you, hey, didn't you keep that from us? We know you have an advantage, and that conversation hasn't been had. Doesn't that bluff become so obvious? Because while I was watching it, I was like, Lyanna, you know Xander's not going to have an epic fake idol and all. You have a 50-50 shot now between Evie and Tiffany, or is that just me watching it from my couch and kind of seeing it all unfold in front of me?
No, Shannon, I agree completely with you. So the thing, I thought the most predictable thing to happen was Xander passing off his idol. Because if I was in Xander's shoes, I would have done the exact same thing. To the extent where I think I tweeted, this is what I will do in this scenario.
Yeah, you did. You
the week
that.
Before.
Yeah.
It's the logical thing to do. It really makes me respect Xander, particularly his ballsy move to tell Tiffany not to waste that idol.
Mm.
In terms of Lyanna, the thing with Lyanna is this. She has tried to play a double agent, but it lasted a whole 3 hours as far as I can see it. Lyanna's drawn the line in the sand. She's now stuck in the camp of Shannon, Danny, and Deshaun. No questions. She's created a lot of bad blood, not at the start of the game where you have the opportunity to eliminate and cleanse the bad blood like I did, but she's created a bad blood with potentially jurors that aren't going
jurors,
to value.
Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. They're not going to value her not making a strategic move, but her making a blunder and her just ditching her friends and her allies for no clear reason. The thing with Lyanna is this. She had an opportunity to be a true double agent where she could have attempted to steal advantages but still controlled an outcome without picking a side. Mm. What she should have known is what you suggested, Shannon. It was highly, highly unlikely for Xander to have the idol in his pants. So the fact that she knew or didn't know about the location of Xander's idol, I think what that shows to me is that there's a certain sense of immaturity still with her gameplay, but that probably comes with age. If I think back to when I was 20 years old, I was a very different person, Shannon. I didn't have the confidence. I didn't have the foresight and that whole decade worth of experience, of life experience, is invaluable. I think that is the clear difference between Shannon's game, who's in complete control, and Lyanna's game, who is more of a case of making friends but taking instructions on what to do rather than giving the instruction and having a lot of social capital like Shan.
Yeah, this was a brutal week for Lyanna, obviously. And I actually thought for Shan as well. Like, obviously, Shan has been playing a killer game, is out leaps and bounds in the chizzy. But if I'm looking at them as a pair for this episode, Lyanna had her doubts about things that ended up being right. She had her doubts about flipping so hard on Yasa. Shan comes and placates that. She has her doubts as well about the fact that they might pass the idol. Shan comes and placates that. And I'm seeing something very interesting in this relationship. Like, we know Shan can cast spells, and I think with, like, the significance of their connection, possibly again with Lyanna's age as well, like, I think that Lyanna is enamored with Shan, and I don't blame her. And I think that this connection it's quite powerful, but, like, very much led by Shan. And Lyanna had doubts about things that I think Shan led her in a different direction, the direction that Shan wanted to go. And I didn't agree with Shan in those ways. So I think that it wasn't a great episode for either. But Lyanna, again, misreading the bluff when you have the information advantage, where I think Xander made a mistake by telling Danny, misread that Danny would then go back to Liana, gives you that information advantage, gives you that out where you can be like, okay, let me try and see what they would reasonably do in this situation. And she doesn't take that. So again, that's a miss. She does it in front of everyone who are going to be jurors. For me, this is like, you know, when Kara accidentally votes out Danny, we were talking about it. Like, that's going to be a tough one with the jury because it's a bad, you know, it's a bad move. And I think as well now, like, Liana's going to get to a final three. If that's what she does, it's not going to be a final two. So as well, she needs to beat two people. And you'll always be able to look back at this kind of like major L that she took against Xander, who, you know, on the opposite side of the spectrum, got a major win that he can point to with a jury. So I think that's a really tough one as well. I'm not going to say it's like a game losing move, but it wasn't great. And I as well think, like, I was very confused about Deshaun comes and wants to sacrifice his own ally in Sydney. And again, it's Shan who is quashing that idea. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Because if you look at the camp out, you guys have just Rickard. Liana's given up all her allies for this. Shan has just the contentious relationship with Rickard. Danny and Deshaun in that have all of the power. They have a Luvu thing going on. They have a guys thing going on. And now he's willing to sacrifice his ally. And Shan's saying no. And at that point, Liana, who had wanted to do that earlier, is just going along with it and saying that she's going to steal the idol. Like, we can talk about possible pros and cons in this, but I'm like, no, this is your out. So Liana, you can be a double agent for longer as well. And you don't necessarily need to use your advantage right now. The idol might be flushed. You take away some of the power from Danny and Deshaun to make this more of an even group. And I think that would have made a lot of sense. But Shan and Liana are like full steam ahead on the plan at that point.
So I couldn't understand why Shan also tried to stop the Sydney backup vote from happening at camp. If I'm Shan, I'm telling myself, as long as one of the Luvu go, it's a win. If Evie went for Shan, probably a win, but I would think at face value, Evie's someone that would be more than willing to work with Shan. But Shan is in a sweet spot. Let's not kid ourselves, Shannon. Shan is someone that has good relationships with everyone, and there's always somebody else that's a preferable target. Rickard has got that villain target. I struggle to see how Rickard is going to navigate his way out of a prickly situation moving forward. Who's he close to? He has no allies.
Shan was cheering for him in that challenge, I will say. Like, she was up and about with that. But yeah, I agree. Like, she has the connection, and it's just through her. And he's hated that power imbalance until now, and now he's like reliant on it.
And the thing is this. Shan still has options moving forward where she can make strategic moves of benefit to put on her resume to look even better in front of a jury without kind of like jeopardizing her own game. So, yeah, she's in this Call 4 alliance. Do they have a name yet, Shannon?
Are we going to call them anything? The camp out is what we're calling them. Yeah, the
camp out. Yes. So she's in the camp out alliance, but she can still pivot back with Rickard, and she can join essentially the minority Ua. Yasa? Was Yasa the yellow one?
Yeah,
this is
Yasa.
The problem with three.
Yeah.
See, I'm a simple Australian, Shannon. I get confused with tribe
names.
You get
English tribe names as well.
Yeah. And if they're not called fire and ice, what are we going to call them?
Yeah.
But she can pivot back with Tiffany, with Evie, and with Xander, and then you could essentially be the majority of five that rides out the remainder of the game. She has those options available. The question is this. I don't know how Liana can fit back in with Xander, Tiffany, and Evie ever.
Yeah.
The way that she managed her relationships at this critical point of the game is very self-inflicting. So it puts Liana in a pickle, but I don't think Shan really has anything to worry about, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, in terms of Shan's connection to Yasa, when Evie's talking to Liana and they're having a fake conversation, but they're like, we could have a really good group moving forward tomorrow, I wondered if the fake group kind of being pitched was like an Ua Yasa combination, if they could just get rid of someone from Luvu. But I do think now, as we're saying, Liana is like completely separated from Yasa, and I think Shan probably comes with her in that. I feel like that's just like a huge separation. It was just such a dramatic departure from that. And I think some of that was due to the situation. I know that Liana's had her issues with Xander, but she even says like she didn't anticipate going against Evie this quickly. And then Evie became like one of the only options available. And then also not only was she the only one of the only options available, but it wasn't just like she could go along with the vote and vote against her, let alone like doing some sort of mole vote where she doesn't vote against her. She has to A, vote against her, and B, steal the idol that would protect her because she's the one who has that. So it made it like this very dramatic departure, I think really massaged by Shan to take her in that direction. So some of it is circumstantial and some of it is just her choosing which dynamic she's going to go with. I will say that like the one thing I'll say about them going with this dramatic plan and ending any chance of a double agency was that she has to steal an idol. She wants an idol. It's not just that you take it from someone else, then like you get to keep it. So it's Shan has one idol.
One. Yeah, take Nasir's idol. And
well,
then
it just gives you Nasir. Like, I think that would have been the thing, is like you have two options of people to steal from. And if you let Xander flush his idol now, play it for Evie incorrectly, for example, and you're voting for Sydney, now you just have Nasir. Like maybe they just wanted the sure thing of having an idol, and Xander laid that trap beautifully. But that's the one thing I can think. But it did make it like there's a very, very dramatic flip and emerge alone, like, which is something we say not to do. She does go into kind of like a newly created group, but it was like, let's put the spotlight on me that I am jumping to something very significant, as we've talked about. But yeah, jumping from my tribe to this new group and betraying them in like, you know, massive fashion.
The one thing that I struggle to compute is this: she has not jumped into a majority. The lines, if they, you're going to fracture them, Shannon, you better fracture them to the point where they're split in two, or they're split in a very close to a 50-50 situation. So when I fractured the lines in episode one of Australian Survivor, there was a clear fracture with four people. It was the Georgia, Joey, Laura, Andrew group. And then I had to work on the rest, which was a majority in paper, and then focus on individuals. The way that Liana's created the fracture, we know about the camp out call four. You've got Nasir, who is floating in between. Erica, who was essentially invisible apart from her advantage being played in the way that it was. And Heather, who was completely invisible. But they also were, like, surely Erica knows that she was being targeted a few episodes ago. Like, everyone in Luvu was targeting Erica at one stage. That is going to come out. That will be, like, very off-putting moving forward.
Yeah, I do agree that it's messy. And now, like, I actually felt like Erica, who was, you know, being thrown out as like the easy name last week when before things got flipped around, I think she's okay for now, because I think that the best thing to do now for that whole group would really kind of just villainize Yasa and take a couple of shots at them and get out Xander's idol and a couple of people from that group, and then possibly they'll be okay. Just try and consolidate those numbers. But I do think it's hard. I mean, for Heather and Erica, who are who should be two key numbers in that. I mean, they're people who have been part of Luvu but not close to Luvu. Like, yeah, they should be swing votes. But then I think it's pretty telling that the most we got from, especially Heather in the episode, was her and Erica kind of providing the background noise to the live tribal council. Like, just asking them, like, things, like, really irrelevant things where Heather's talking about, like, being hungry and stuff. And we're not even focusing on that, because we're focusing on the actual strategy that's happening. And at a point, they're, like, the only two sitting down. And I thought it was just, like, really such a great visual metaphor for where they seem to be. Because, yes, they should be major, major factors who could be very fluid numbers. And we just have no idea where they stand. And we don't even know if that's, like, something that they would do.
And this is why the most dangerous player in any kind of Survivor worldwide, not just the extremely long Australian Survivor, is the under-the-radar player. Right now, Erica and Heather are very unlikely targets. Why would you vote them off? They're not going to win a challenge. They're not influential players in the game to the extent where they have a resume and they're a jury threat. They're going to coast along, and they're probably quite likely to get to the end. The other person who I think whose prospects are looking good, even though she's in a minority, is Tiffany. So in the minority alliance, Evie straight away has been a target before. She could be a target again. They think she's strategic. They think she's social. So they're gonna target Evie. And then obviously Xander is a physical threat. Xander has the idol. Xander's the leader of the group. Xander becomes a target. But I don't see Tiffany being an obvious next vote out, and then that leaves Tiffany, Heather, and Erica as critical pivots in the game, and that's where you will think you will see someone like Shan take them under her wing.
Yeah, I think that the one time where kind of under the radar players have been in trouble in the US in the past has been at like big merge votes. It used to be like we take out this other member of the alliance, but as merge votes got bigger, this was only 12, but like really getting to 13, like sometimes the group would just kind of combine into this like monolith that would take out an under the radar player. And that looks like what they were trying to do last week. But now I think like the train has completely left the station on that. Like I do think Erica could have been an easy vote. And ironically, had that tribe or that team won immunity and then this Twisted flipped it around, it would have made a really interesting vote where these heavy hitters were up for, you know, for the vote. It would have flipped that around to giving them easy vote outs, which I think they would have taken and made it really boring. Like they got lucky that they got an interesting vote out of this because they made the really big heavy hitters vulnerable. I think that that was a dicey spot for Erica, but now that it's gone through to this point where it was such a huge, again, like dissociating merge vote, I think these easy votes, you know, like Heather and Erica, these under the radar players will be okay. And I think it's going to be like battle lines drawn. And I think they have been drawn. And I think that that's where it would be going. So yeah, it was a good spot for Erica smashing the hourglass, and that one immunity, I think, will save her for quite a while.
Yeah, I think so too. Look, I think Erica, she's starting to come out of her shell, and she could be the pocket rocket that propels herself right toward the end, Shannon.
Yeah, I think as well, I mean, just a little bit more on Shan and Liana, like for Shan, it was a brutal episode for Shan. I felt like the reads were often off, as we're saying, like I think Liana and Deshaun were much more on point with the reads about how things were going to go poorly. And Shan was like, I had confidence in it that was misplaced. And then something else that I thought was so interesting was that during the live tribal, Shan tells Tiffany that Sydney's the vote, and Deshaun walks up on that, and that's why he then asks Shan about it. And it's actually Shan who gives away again that information advantage, because they wanted Sydney to be like the Edgardo type third option that no one would even think of playing an idol on, just kind of take it out by surprise. And then once Sydney became an option, they're like, well, now they could play the idol on Sydney, which we do see Yasa contemplating. Then Shan rallies by being the one, I think it was her voice, saying we'll just split the vote. But I think she overcomplicated it and made it trickier by telling Tiffany that by misreading that Tiffany would then take it back, which she does. And it was Deshaun's great read that swoops in to say like, hey, that could be an issue. And then Shan rallies with the split vote. So look, she's been amazing through the season, but not to belabor the point, but obviously the Tiffany thing last week, you know, she was one of the reasons that got majorly outed as well, which is what led to all of this. So a couple of tricky episodes for Shan and Liana, and hopefully they can bounce back from here.
Yeah, the one thing that Shan has done is elevate her threat level. So there are a multitude of players from different former tribes and different alliances that could agree to Shan as a compromise future target. She's someone that leaks information. She's someone that is able to build relationships very quickly. And she's someone that's generally very likable in front of a jury. If I'm sitting down, if I'm Ricard, for instance, I have the tools that I need to convince others for Shannon to be a compromise vote.
I think it's just going to be how much her social power saves her there. Because again, it is kind of mesmerizing to see like the hold she has over someone like Liana and how she's kind of controlled other people as well. So it's really going to come down to that like magic touch. But I do agree that like objectively on paper, there's a lot there about, you know, throwing Shan's name out and seeing how that goes at a future time. And it'll be how well she's just insulated from a social perspective. But as well, I think like with Liana last week, when Haley and I talked it out about her giving Tiffany that information, once Shan had outed it, that she got something, it was on Liana to either lie about it or give her the information. And Haley and I were like, look, it will be hard if she wants to work with Tiffany in the future, which she clearly did. Like, I don't think she expected it to go this pear-shaped this early, and it was circumstantial to a degree. But if she wants to do that, she kind of has to tell the truth. But I do think, like, that was a mixed strategy for me to tell Tiffany last week truly what the advantage was and then flip fully on Yasa this week. I think she'd backed herself into a corner where she couldn't really do that because she'd given up a lot of the power of knowledge is power, which was a choice she made, I guess, in trying to work with Yasa. So you can't turn around, even with a huge twist, you know, changing everything up. You can't really turn around 12 hours later and say, I'm doing the opposite thing, because you've already kind of made your bed with giving Tiffany that information.
Look, the one thing, and it goes back a few episodes now, when Liana did get the knowledge is power, nobody knew she had that. The standard fare, when they went off on their little adventure up the hill, was you flip the wheel and you get an extra vote.
Yeah.
If I was Liana, I've heard you say it before when you analyze advantages and whether you disclose them or not. In the game, if I'm Liana, I come back and I tell everyone I have an extra vote.
Mm.
You don't have an extra vote. You have the knowledge is power. No one's going to question it. So I don't know if, like in US Survivor, maybe they tend to wave their pieces of paper around and things like that. They don't take it at face value. But if she could have gotten away by doing that, she was better off doing that because, like in a hypothetical situation like the merge vote that we just see, you could just split the votes anyway without that knowledge of this power.
And there's like so many votes disclosed. Right now. 12 people, three extra votes that are real, and your fake one. Like, correct. It's a lot of votes. Is anyone really keeping track
of
that?
She could have saved that for herself for a rainy day. That was my kind of thinking with my secret idol. I didn't tell anyone I had the secret idol. I told everything to Kara, but I still didn't even tell my closest ally that I had an idol because at this stage of the game, the individual stage of the game, you have to work out what's good for you, what's good for your end game, and what's also good for your alliance. So I dealt with that moral dilemma by eventually doing what was good for my alliance, which at that point, my only rock-solid ally was Kara. But Liana doesn't have a rock-solid ally. She's got an overlord in Shan giving her instructions. And then at the end of the day, Danny and Deshaun have only known Liana and Shan for what? A day? Has it actually only been a day?
It's been like 2 days, I think, because Erica was there for, this was like the second night. Yeah, because Erica was at XL for 2 nights. So this will be the third night. Yeah,
she would have been there night. They merge on afternoon of day 12, you're right. They have two overnights together, including in the pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they haven't known each other that long. So Deshaun is clearly a player. He's clearly someone that forecasts different options. If I'm Deshaun, I'm willing to jettison both Liana and Shan. Put it that way.
Mm. And even if he's not willing to do it, you've put that power in his hands to decide. And I think that's a big thing as well. So I think that both Liana and Shan are a little bit cornered in the camp out. And it was actually them that were fighting against Deshaun to take out one of his other options. But again, there might have been some stuff around wanting to take the idol there. But I would have been like, great. Thank you. What a compromise. And I'll keep pretending to Yasa that I'm with them and maybe that'll help us out as well. So I definitely would have taken that out earlier. And obviously Deshaun's read was correct on how poorly this could have gone. So a lot of things there that were a bit iffy. But I want to talk about the rest of Yasa as well, because you were very high on Xander. And I am too. I've got a couple of question marks, but
tell me the question marks.
So for me, the first one is he shouldn't have told Danny the stuff. He gave Danny way too much information. He misread that connection. Like, I appreciate for both of them that they're reaching across the aisle for this, like, men's thing that they both kind of have in the back of their mind. But he gave up all the information there. And then Danny did use it against him and immediately tell Liana. Liana just didn't capitalize on it. Because if I had, again, I'd read the bluff. But that's something that could have happened. The other thing, which is a question mark, is I think his read on implicit immunity is wrong based on the formula, which is that if you have implicit immunity, you play it if they can split the votes, and you don't play it because if they can't split the votes, because then they'll be too scared to vote for you. But they could split the vote. So when Xander is saying, Evie, you'll be fine, Evie, you'll be fine, I'm like, no, they very much might not be fine. And as an Evie fan, I was like, please play the idol on this person, please God, because I thought that she wasn't making it through to the next episode. I was like yelling at my TV, and I truly do believe it was chaos around the split vote that kept Evie in the game. I don't think that Xander read something amazing. There's no way he could have known it was going to be 5-4. I think that was illogical. I think it was chaos. I think chaos saved Evie here. But I will say in that while I do think if Xander truly, and he did seem genuine, if Xander truly did believe that they wouldn't vote for Evie because she had implicit immunity, that to me is wrong, read the formula. But I also don't begrudge him if what he's really thinking is, hey, I work so hard for this idol, harder than maybe anyone in Survivor history has ever worked for an idol. I'm not playing it for you. I just found out that you gave up all this information to Deshaun about me a few weeks ago. I'm going to cross my fingers for you. Hope that somehow Sydney goes home, some chaos, they choose her, whatever it is. Hope it works out for you, Evie. But if it doesn't, I'd rather have my idol than you. And if that's what it is, I actually don't begrudge him. But if he was genuinely reading that they wouldn't vote for Evie, I think he was actually wrong. As much as the results proved him right, I think he got lucky.
I was thinking that I agree with what you've said, Shannon, but from my perspective, Xander had a 50-50 shot. So his worst case scenario is he was wrong, Evie goes,
yeah,
and then he is stuck with an idol and Tiffany, and then they can maneuver as a block of two with 11, 12 plays left, whatever it is. But he's gotten the preferable situation where he has his core alliance of two and the idol. Yes, you're right. From a mathematical perspective, the split vote nullified the implicit immunity with the idol and the pressure, but he now has a larger block and he has to just pull over two of the isolated three people to be able to navigate toward the end game. I actually think he's in a very good position. The question that I have is, and I don't want this to be interpreted the wrong way, does Nasir have the strategic chops to see the writing on the wall against him, or is Nasir just a goat that's going to get dragged along by that majority camp out alliance until he finishes sixth?
I love Nasir, but I think everything we've seen from him has been not being able to read the dynamics as well. For example, we have seen Danny say, oh, I'm not really vibing so well with Nasir. Cut to Nasir saying, like, this is going so well. Like, I feel like we've seen the misreads. So I do think, like, I think Luvu can kind of keep it in check. Even with Erica, they send her to Exile Island. Like, you think she'd be out, and she votes with them. And I actually think, like, then she kind of gets one over on them and, you know, makes them not have immunity. And I kind of, maybe we'll even bridge that gap. It's like, look, I sent you to Exile. You took away my immunity. We're kind of like on an even playing field. Like, she might come back to that. And as we've seen from some like Heather, they may be dealing with some of those more passive players, more of the pawns in the game, to really move it forward with their actual active player alliance. So I actually think that like they really will have a lot of that power, because it'll be really having to like pull over for Yasa some of these other numbers. And we just haven't seen that like level of extreme active gameplay. We have from Erica a bit, but I think it'll be hard to get all of them, because they'll need to get three other people in this 11 person tribe. They need to get Nasir. They do have an extra vote, but so that would only make it 12. They need to, and also Shan has an extra vote. They need to get Nasir and Erica and Heather, which maybe, but I think it'll be tough.
So what really would have impressed me with Xander is if he pulled the barrel against Liana, told her, I know what you're planning, don't do it. And if he dragged her across with Shan, with an extra idol from Nasir, if that had happened, and in this hypothetical world where he went full on kind of like master mafia, he would have been in an alliance with two idols in their possession, with two extra votes. It would have just been this huge, like, impressive thing, Shannon. But that was the only kind of failure. But I'm also watching it sitting down in my living room, not in this really short, condensed game where some psychotic, you're not immune anymore, has happened, and they have a two-hour scramble before a tribal council.
I just think that relationship with Liana was just not there with Xander. Like, maybe if it had been Evie, for example, and we've seen like a lot of that relationship, but like Xander and Liana have been kind of at each other.
See, the weird thing is this: you get really close to everyone when you're out there. Maybe it was just me, and I know they've only been out there for 14 days, but it's like when I think back on my season, I was within 14 days, not that close to Laura, but I still think, do you know what? I've lived with her. I know what she's like in the morning. I know when she's moody. I know when to crack jokes with her. I know when to just do general chit-chat with her. You get really, really close to these people in such a short amount of time. And he should not have given up on the Liana relationship. We obviously see such a short, condensed version of it. It's only a 45-minute episode. We don't get 4.5 hours a week of US Survivor, Shannon. Maybe that's what Jeff Probst can do as the EP of that show. But I think that was the only failure of his game in the episode, and that is really nitpicking from my armchair. I think the fact that he kept two core Reliance members in Evie and in Tiffany and the idol, and he looks like a boss, is good for him, although he's still in a minority. But he's also a challenge beast. Like, he's someone that could go on an immunity run and navigate his way through the game.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the Evie Sydney split as 50-50 like you did. I think probably Evie, I thought, had like 70% chance of going at least. But again, his prerogative if he wants to keep his idol. I don't begrudge him that at all. I just think that for me, it was mainly if he genuinely didn't think that Evie would go, I think he's reading the math wrong. And I think giving that up to Danny, I thought the rest was fine. Like moving across to try and work with Liana, it feels so tough to me. Like I'm obsessed with the Yasa dynamic. They are, to me, like such a dysfunctional family. Like it truly feels like that to the point where like Xander calls Evie an older sister. I feel like there's this like real sibling rivalry between these two young people and Xander and Liana, where they get these like mirror confessionals of like beating each other. And Tiffany is like so the mom. So like they definitely like are the dysfunctional family very explicitly to me. But then it's like they're also meant to be like the baby turtles who like rallied and could get it done. And I feel like this episode was just like turtles just like attacking each other. Like that's what it felt like with Yasa. Like this was just like this turtle battle that they were having. And I think he did most of it right. But I do think, like, the dynamic to me is so interesting going out of this huge tribal council where these two sides really clashed and it was this major merge battle. And I don't know who won. Like, who do you think won this? Because Deshaun and Luvu, they're the majority. They kind of get out their target. But Deshaun is sacrificing an ally to do so and doesn't get out his original target of Evie. Whereas Yasa don't have the power of the numbers. I do feel that Evie's fate in the game was kind of left up to luck and chance. But they obviously defeat Knowledge of Power and come out of it having, you know, you kept their idol as well and kept all of their Yasa numbers, even though they also lost a number in Sydney that possibly could have worked with them. So it was very neutral. Like, I don't know if I know who kind of won this battle.
I think in terms of this was a case of attrition. Everyone copped some kind of a hit except three of the non-under-the-radar players. First one, Danny. So in the battle between the two alpha males of Louisville, Deshaun was the target, not Danny. That's a great position for Danny to be in.
Yeah,
he's got multiple buffers around him, and he's still a conduit for information. Moving over to Yasa, Tiffany. She wasn't targeted.
Mm-hmm.
Evie was.
Mm-hmm.
She's someone that technically has the idol in her pocket. She doesn't have to give it back. And, you know, she also has the buffers around her. She's got Xander, the physical male around her, Evie, the strategic person, and then everybody else and all the chaos that happens around them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, of course, Ricard. Ricard is someone who won immunity, showcased his prowess, and hasn't really got a foot in either camp. The fact that he's flexible is probably a good thing for him.
Mm.
Ricard got no attrition in this episode. He didn't stick his head out of the sand like Shan did and be wrong, didn't put a target on his back, and has probably set himself up as someone that can be a bit of a mover and shaker moving forward.
Yeah, I think those are all really great points. And I definitely agree, especially with Danny, because we see Yasa decide on the target. And as well as I think Deshaun did, Deshaun's connection with Evie does not save him here. And I feel like possibly Danny's connection with Xander might have had his name be out of the firing line. We've seen them work on it throughout the merge from that like first episode connection. And Danny is a huge threat as well. As much as Deshaun, they're both very, very central in terms of the dynamics. Danny is a massive immunity threat as well. And now he's vulnerable, which again, he didn't even... Like, he lost the immunity challenge, but he was immune, and now he's not. Like, maybe we take that opportunity. So Danny could have been really effective. And the fact that we didn't hear his name, I thought, was, like, really, really impressive as well. So I think, yeah, Danny was a huge winner as well. Deshaun, it was dicey, but got out of it so impressively. But I agree with the names that you're saying. They have a lot there. And for Tiffany, I think she'll give the idol back. I think that she had a lot of respect in that when, like, it's up to her whether she wants to play the idol for Evie, and maybe Evie's more important to her than to Xander. There's been more of a split there. We've seen, like, Xander literally just found out that Evie gave all that information to Deshaun. And it's not Tiffany's idol that she's worked so hard for. Like, she could have played it on Evie and really made sure of that. And I thought it was really respectful not to, and to listen to Xander when it was technically her idol at that time. And I think that that would be hard to rally from socially. So that would just look extremely ballsy to take someone else's idol and use it against their wishes. So I thought that she acted well there. She was a very good mum in this dysfunctional family.
Yeah, so look, I can't say enough good things about Tiffany. I really hope she goes on a long run. I just find her highly entertaining. I think she's genuine, and I think she's just so much fun.
Mm. I want to say with Xander as well, like, Xander showed a fake idol that he created to people who had an idol, and they believed it. Like, that's how good the fake idol was. I just need to give props to that.
Do you know what, Shannon? How can you not notice someone making a fake idol, particularly when it's been raining nonstop in Fiji? It's like, are these people not paying attention?
Well, he said that he did it ages ago, so maybe, but like, I don't know that anyone knew about it, but like, maybe in these small tribes you get more alone time. But like, how did it look that good that people bought it and they have it in their pocket, and did they, no red flags were going up about that?
So here's a fun fact. Baden had a sarong on my season. And at one stage, we were thinking about making a fake idol when we were the clear minority after Kara had been voted out. And I was like, oh, Baden, we've got to do it with your sarong badge thing. No one's going to know a difference. And do you know what he says to me? And he was right. He goes, George, everybody's seen my sarong. Mm-hmm. So he said effing sarong, but I'll keep it G-rated. Everyone had seen the sarong and he was right. So it's just like, either Xander had this bracelet like deliberately in his bag the whole time, or just, you know, but the only person that could have known it was fake was Liana, if we think about it, and maybe she's just not that observant.
Well, Shan could have, Shan and Nasir have the equivalent idols, and he's showing his version of that, like, and they're believing it.
Yeah, you're right, hey?
Yeah, like, I don't know how it was that good. I also thought, like, passing to Tiffany was a pretty good bet, because even when he doesn't have it, like, no one seems to think that Tiffany could have it. They're all like, oh, Evie must have it. So it was obvious, but it was smart.
Yeah. In terms of two, it was always had to pass it to Tiffany. Must pass it to Tiffany. It was too obvious to give it to Evie.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So something I wanted to ask you as well was around the Sean outing what Evie had done in episode 2, telling him everything about Xander's information at that point, thinking that Xander would go. And we found out that Evie has not cleared any of that up with Xander. Mm. And I was just wondering, because I feel like it's an unfortunate spot. Like, you thought Xander would go home. He didn't. Things changed, as we talked about in that episode. And I think we said in that episode, like, I definitely said, I really like giving all the information to Deshaun. I do believe in a different world where this vote wasn't so constricted, that relationship would have played out. Like, they seem to not want to go against each other. But I think we all worried at the time, like, well, now Xander didn't go home, so there is kind of that loose thread. Knowing that you're getting to emerge and Deshaun will have that kind of power. Again, you might have that relationship, but Deshaun will have that information over you. Like, would you have gotten ahead of that with Xander and just kind of like apologized or kind of told him what had gone on there?
Look, that's a difficult one. I mean, obviously, I think back when Haley threw me under the bus at Tribal Council, and it's hard to think of how to respond. I interpreted Evie to be a bit shady there, to be honest with you. I don't think that was the time to be like, I'm so sorry, Xander, please, you know, make sure you still play the idol for me. That just makes me feel like Evie is shifty. Like, I reckon she could have just gone, so what, Deshaun? That was 10 days ago.
Yeah, which in this game is like 20 days for regular survivor.
Like, it could have just been a case of going, Deshaun, you're under the threat. You're under the pump. You're saying anything to throw a bit of mud. Xander's my mate, essentially. I'm close with Xander. He's my closest ally.
Mm.
And like, I think that would have been a way to deal with it. Could she have disclosed something beforehand? Probably, but, you know, maybe she did. Maybe it just didn't make the edit.
Well, Xander seemed shocked by it. Like, I think for me, maybe it's too results-oriented to be like, we're going to emerge. Xander's still here. I did this thing. You do have the relationship, and everything she's saying about her relationship with Xander is true. Like, you know, she did protect him in that way. But, like, is there a way that you can go before the merge and be like, Xander, Fun fact, I did think you were going home that day. Like, Liana was pretty set on it. Like, you know, don't make it a you thing. But, like, you know, you were in trouble, and I was so desperate. Like, it looked like we were never going to win another challenge, and I was trying to create this relationship. And I do apologize that I gave up some of your information. I'll help you work around it. Like, we're even tighter than we were. Like, never doubt us, but I just want to give you that honesty now to tell you what I did. Like, I just think for me, it's a scary thing to come into the merge and have someone who you have known for 3 hours, even though it was a positive 3 hours, just kind of have this information over you that they could use against you, which Deshaun does.
Look, it's a case of, has Xander asked her what happened when they went off on their adventure? If Evie had lied to Xander and said, you know, we spoke about XYZ, I'd be getting back to camp after tribal and pulling Evie aside going, you didn't say that to me beforehand. It would make me think that she's a bit deceitful in how they hold information. But at the end of the day, it's like, why would you be offended by something like this on Survivor? You've got to look at the mechanics of the game that are unfolding in front of you. Unless Xander gets reeled into the Camp Alliance because they just want to take in the only other alpha male available and they start picking off under the radar players like Heather and Erica, well, I don't think that's likely. The way that the mechanics have unfolded, that's the most important consideration. Me, who isn't offended by anything and looks at just what's happening today as the only relevant criteria, I wouldn't be holding that lack of disclosure from Evie against me or against them.
Well, do you think that Xander went into that tribal council in, like, intending to play the idol for Evie? Because I read that as very genuine.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. Well, because he doesn't. And I was, like, tearing up in the conversation where, like, Evie is crying. He's like, you're my big sister. Like, I feel like he was genuine about that. And I think, like, even though he didn't play the idol on her, like, they're very connected now against this, like, big majority. They pulled off something together. Like, they all made it out. And I think they're very connected. But he doesn't play the idol for her. So what is it? Is it that the fact that he's a little more reticent because Deshaun gives him this information, or does he feel in the chaos now he could maybe have his cake and eat it too and he's willing to make that bet? Or is it a combination of, like, I'm less tied to you and I think you have more of a chance to make it through, and when I combine those things, I'm going to keep my idol and just kind of go with that situation? Which is probably what I think for me. I think maybe it is a combination of, you're not my favorite person as well right now. Like, we'll work through it, but, like, at the right of this moment, you know, that was a bit of an unfortunate thing to hear. And I feel like, maybe, again, erroneously, but, like, maybe you could actually really make it through. Again, I disagree with him. I think it was, like, 70 to 80% chance that Evie was out and that they got very lucky. But if he really thinks, like, Evie has a real chance, like, maybe he just is making that bet. But I wonder how much Deshaun's information fed into his decision in that way to not play the idol for Evie.
I think it's Deshaun's information. I think once it's that piece of information that's flowed where Sydney's the primary target in a split vote, you just know. And then given that that decision was made at a really, really late tribal council scramble, like they love doing on US Survivor, I just think he knew that Sydney was going and it just didn't need to get played. You, as stupid as this sounds, Shannon, you either know or you don't. And
I just don't see how. Like, there's no way he can know that it's going to be, you know, 5-4. Like, how he doesn't know exactly where they're voting. I don't think they knew where they were voting. I don't think it's I think that's an impossible thing for him to read.
When Shan pulled everyone aside and started talking about, let's split the vote, like, it must have been a very good whisper, but you can just tell. You can just tell. And there could have been a nudge that we don't see that makes the edit that says, you know, it's Sydney, don't worry, you know, a little whisper to Tiffany. Like,
always Tiffany.
Tiffany's the conduit here, mate. She's gold. I love her so much.
Yeah, it's possible. I think he got lucky, but again, with all of that, no one has worked harder in human history for an idol than Xander. I do not begrudge him for keeping that idol for himself to hopefully get it back from Tiffany and to use it to save himself one day, especially knowing he's going to be in the minority. Like, he had to go through so much. He lost his votes. He said the phrase 3 times. He waited for Brad to get voted out, and then Brad and Shan and Nasir had to find the idol. Then he had to give the idol away. Then he had to make a fake idol, and now he has to get it back, and that's how he will have his idol safely in his hands so that he can't be stolen. Like, what a journey. Like, yeah, let him keep the idol. I feel like that's a fair thing to choose over an ally you just found out possibly just said some things against you. Like, even I'm always like, oh, you choose an ally over an idol, but I'm like, maybe this ally and especially this idol, like, maybe you keep that idol close. You deserve it.
I just hope that he doesn't go home with that idol in his pocket.
I can't, that if that happens. It would be grandest,
the grandest irony in Survivor history.
I'd be like, dun, 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 dun. That's what we were saying with Pia. Like, the curb music has followed Xander around, not this episode, but at other times. If that's what ends up happening with this idol, which has, again, not been played, but has been, like, the most contested idol ever, it would just be too painful for me to handle that. Like, that can't be what happens.
It would be poetic. It would be fantastic. Oh, that'll be a great episode. I really hope that happens next week.
No, that's so cruel, George. How could you hope for that? No, we don't want that to happen.
It'll keep the ratings up.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an amazing moment. But he's earned it to this point. And another question I have about, I'm just trying to, like, work out what these people were doing in, like, true chaos. Why do the Us at Three vote for Deshaun? Now, maybe Evie and Tiffany are still relying on an idol play. Maybe they think that the idol's still going to be played for Evie because, again, they're, like, asking for it in that moment. But for someone like Xander, who seems to be kind of out on playing the idol, they're like, aren't those wasted votes? Like, isn't the vote then to pile on Sydney, as you would do if you're going to, or you or your ally are going to be the other target of a split? You're not playing the idol. Like, I feel like those were just kind of wasted votes for Deshaun.
See, that indicates to me that Xander, Tiffany, and Evie are aware of the camp out alliance. They must know that it's a priority in a, you know, in the off chance that Nasir and Erica had flipped to get rid of one of those alliance members. In saying that, maybe they were just hoping for the best. I mean, it was choice between Deshaun and Danny, really. Unless
they could have piled on Sydney.
Well, they could have piled on Sydney.
Then you just make it a sure, like, everything that Xander's saying, like, oh, you're not going to be the target. Like, I feel a lot better about that if Sydney's getting three extra votes. Like, then that would be a much more, to me, like, salient assumption.
See, look, here is where Nasir, like, I don't know. I just keep thinking about Nasir's idol. It's like, why not try something special and get rid of Nasir and his idol? Like, that could have been persuasive to someone like Shan, who is obviously a game player, who's obviously a mafia pastor boss. If you say to her, please beg Liana to vote for Nasir, just do something special, she probably would have done it. And then, do you know what? From Shan's perspective, her camp out four survives.
Here's my question, and now I'm thinking about this with Shan. She is the mafia pastor. She does have this power over Liana. Does she want to alienate Liana? Does she want Liana to just be hers? Because that's, she succeeded in that. I mean, Liana has no one else now. She could not be more reliant on Shan. Liana's in her pocket 100%. And even though I think Liana's allies maybe could have been Shan's allies and they could have worked with that and given her more options, maybe that's not what she wants. Maybe she wants people like Ricard and Liana to be really like her pawns in the game and not have other options themselves, and really create that divide to cut Liana off from any other allies. And we've seen the power that she has over Liana. Like, maybe that is why she was so kind of bold with this move, about really making it a Yasa thing rather than looking at other options with someone like Nasir, who you wouldn't cut anything off. Like, Nasir and Liana have no real relationship. Like, if she does that, like, yeah, you get an idol, but, you know, you keep Liana possibly with some other friends. And maybe Shan is really cornering Liana off herself.
I think I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just think from the perspective of Shan, her closest ally Liana gets a guaranteed idol, and then obviously Nasir starts panicking, but he doesn't have the strategic chops to navigate out in a live tribal. If they actually target Nasir there, you pick up an idol, you get rid of a physical male player who's a challenge threat, who's floating around, who is an unlikely target for at least 10 days. Oh, sorry, there's not that long to go. Let me condense that down. For at least 3 or 4 episodes. So what's that? Only 3 days in US Survivor?
It's not a lot, George.
Can I just say, when that day 14 popped up at the start of the episode, I was just going, is that all?
The game's barely started.
Is that all? Like, my shorts were still white at day 14.
Yeah.
I still had a gut at day 14.
It is a tough one with Liana and Shan. I feel like Shan thought the Xander idol still was a sure thing, though, like, that was a misread. So in terms of the sure thing, like, I don't think that she felt it was dicier with Xander necessarily. than it would be with Nasir. And then you have this other group who are even saying, look at the groups, we don't have the numbers, and still voting for Deshaun. So I think that, again, in this really constricted format, when it was just really difficult, I think some people probably just made some miscreants and some errors and maybe some confusing votes that I'm trying to make sense out of. And maybe there is some sense to it, but some of the things I still have question marks about.
At the end of the day, we're still talking about Shan's perspective, and I'm happy to do that, Shannon, because she's clearly the main character in this season.
Yeah.
From Shan's perspective, Sydney going home is a good thing. Like, aside from sticking your head out of the grass just a little bit, copying a bit of attrition as a possible target, she's had someone go that she had no relationship with, that she was not an ally with, and do you know what? That's not necessarily a bad thing at this stage of the game.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great thing, to the point where I think that that's something she should have been pushing for. Like, that was against her will. And I think that, to me, is the question mark. But again, there are points to that in terms of how she can work with Liana and that. And then I think a lot of it on the misreads as well. But yeah, I mean, she was really pushing for it to be the Yasa thing. I think more than anyone, more than Liana, even, she was driving that. She didn't get necessarily what she wanted in that, in terms of she didn't get the idol or someone voted out for that. But I think Sydney going out, maybe even better for her. And Liana's really the one who loses the social capital there. So it could really all work out, and maybe she rallies from a couple of difficult episodes, and we know that she has the skills to do that. And I wanted to ask you about some of the mechanisms that we've seen. Pretend it's last week. What was your general thoughts about the big twist through the merge, non-merge double that we saw?
I know that the Hourglass has copped a lot of heat. I've seen Sydney's comments on it in her exit press, but I am not interpreting that as a game-breaking twist. It is a twist that still gave people the opportunity to, A, win immunity beforehand, and B, hours and hours and hours, I'm calling it at least 3 hours of scrambling at camp or at a live tribal council to do something. I don't think Sydney was screwed out of the game. I think it made it less likely for her to survive. Clearly, when you're a 1 in 5 chance of going home and you're not in an alliance, that's not good for you. But at the end of the day, why wasn't she in the alliance? Mm. You know, that's on her.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, who got more screwed at the final 12 between Baden and Sydney?
100% Baden.
Yeah, I would agree, Baden.
Okay. Disclosure, Baden's a mate, okay? Baden is the most screwed player in Survivor history.
I disagree.
What happened to Baden with one power vote within those circumstances was just a complete injustice, particularly given that, from my selfish perspective, for my game, it made it really, really difficult, losing my closest ally at the time, aside from Kara. From his perspective, he had no way to influence a vote. And from all of the players' perspective, walking into that tribal council, we thought there were 3 people voting. Mm. So if in this hypothetical situation, and I don't want to make it all about Australian Survivor, if in a hypothetical situation on that Baden vote, you could have had me trying to influence individual players. You could have had Hayley trying to do the same thing, although she did, but it ended up screwing her the next episode. Baden was royally, royally screwed. That did not happen to the 5 unimmune players in this US Survivor episode.
I agree. I think Baden had pretty much no options, and Sydney, again, had the options that Deshaun or Danny found, which was not to be the target and to have the social capital to, in a very, very constricted situation. Again, still a very difficult situation, but something could have been found there. For me, the main thing that made her screwed was just that, you know, that she had immunity and then it was taken away. And I know that people say the groups were very unfair, but that to me is just like, you know, kind of just like the game and random selection that's been really very much a part of the game, and they got a very lucky team and they won. But then she won immunity. And for me, revoking that is what was really unfair, but I still think she could have maybe found some outs in the group. So, yeah, Baden having one vote, I don't think I can get past that.
Here's the thing with Sydney, and I think to the Luvu dynamic. So Sydney obviously had a relationship with, I'm assuming, Nasir. Why didn't Sydney walk up to Nasir and say, save me and we can get rid of Evie? Sydney, I feel like for someone that was so brash and so confident, she was too complacent when the shit hit the fan. It hit the fan, nothing happened. Here was a chance to walk up to Nasir and say, put something on your survivor resume, make me want to vote for you if you're in that final three, save me with an immunity idol. And then Evie goes home.
I think what we've said about Sydney in the past and flaws in the social game did play out. I think we've called her like a Mo-Hope type relationship person, but not like blanket social player, like someone who kind of get her core connections, but not necessarily extend that across the tribe. Like, I don't think that she did have much of a relationship with Nasir. I think it was, she put a lot of eggs in the basket of Danny and Deshaun and then was kind of making some relationships with Yasa. Like, again, like people seem to want to work with her, but I don't think that it was consistent enough across the tribe. And then those key relationships didn't play out that she became the priority to save them. So I think that we do see kind of that problem when you really do corner yourself into some relationships as being like your only options. And then if it becomes very constricted and those options leave you, you don't have much of a fallback. So I think it really does show that you need to be as open as possible to everyone and not just like cut off options like a Heather or an Erica. Correct. Or people who might want to vouch for her, who were really, it seemed very alienated from her, or someone like an Asiya. You really need to be open to everyone so that if things get dicey, like they'll be the ones to vouch for you rather than just like leaving it to a couple of people who Danny and Deshaun were her allies. Like they have to worry about themselves. Like they couldn't vouch for her at that point. So she really needed to have more options and more numbers. And I think we kind of saw that social game play out where it was just more specific rather than more general.
So when they get back from their immunity challenge, Sydney needs to walk up to Erica and say to Erica, 2 days ago, the boys wanted to vote you out before we had this merge. I just want you to know because I'm looking out for you. Sydney needs to walk up to Nasir and say, do you know what? When you came up to us and said the boys were filling up looking for idols, they know and they were willing to target you then. I want you to know because I'm looking out for you. She was not proactive enough in this uncertain time to survive. The difference, and then if we talk about positive relationships, it was around day 14 when Kara saved me with her idol. She saved me because Kara knew no matter what, I was there for her. I see that with Xander and Evie. I understand on that small tribe dynamic, and in my circumstance, it was just a small alliance dynamic. So it was essentially the same thing, or just living with the other side. But in that small tribe dynamic, you get very, very close to people. How could she have not had a single ally from Erica, from Heather, from Nasir, willing to do anything for her? That says to me, and I know it's a very limited edit, that she, from the other player's perspective, she was sacrificable. She had a flaw in her game.
And it's that lack of killer instinct, because Deshaun's name comes up before hers does. So she doesn't even need to throw it out the way Deshaun does. Like Deshaun throws out an ally that he was willing to throw a challenge to protect. That's how close they were, but he still knew it was necessary in the name of self-preservation. Like she wouldn't even have to throw it out because that name was already there. She just had to attach yourself to it and then bring numbers to it. And I do agree, if she has the killer instinct to go to people and say, look, I'm very worried that it could be me, there's only five of us available and some of us have idols or people that are willing to play idols on us, then you do go to like an Erica and a Sierra for sure and say, Yasa are already doing the Deshaun thing. So you just go to them and say, Erica, like, it wasn't Scissors Paper Rock. Like, why didn't they send you to exile? They were throwing a challenge to get rid of you. She has that information as well. And the Sierra, like, you've been on the outs, like, they're only bringing you in now, but they're actually like not as close to you as you think. Like she had some ammo there. And I think that if she'd had the killer instinct of Deshaun, maybe she could get ahead of it to really just like pile on this Deshaun vote and bring numbers to it. I don't know if it would have worked because I don't think she had that social capital, but if she'd already kind of created that social capital and then had really like made the killer blow, I don't think she did either of those things. And I think that was the flaw in her game, but that's what would have saved her.
The key to being good at Survivor, Shannon, is realizing that no matter what, under any circumstances, there are always tools in the arsenal and there are always levers you can pull. With Sydney,
unless you're Baden at the final 12 at one
unless
time.
Unless you're Baden with a big power vote to Danny, who just throws a pile of husk onto a fire challenge and then it miraculously explodes.
Yeah, every other time.
Well, every other time it doesn't miraculously explode. But she had a few. There weren't many. There were probably only two tools. The pressure Erica, pressure Nasir tools, but she didn't use them and she went home. I think that the twist obviously led to that outcome, but she could have navigated out of it. She could have been great. She wasn't.
I do agree. And I want to say about the twist, like, I really love that Norm was mad at Erica, because that's exactly what we predicted. We're like, who could begrudge her? And in Sydney's interview as well, her ex-interview, she was like, I wasn't mad about it because I would have done the same thing. Like, it made me feel very happy, because I don't think that's what the show anticipated. I thought they'd think everyone would kind of be against Erica. If anything, some people were happy with her that she gave them immunity, and the rest were just, you know, not hating the player and hating the game, which is completely the correct way to assign that blame, because it was very much production's fault, and they weren't mad at Erica, and I felt like that really just showed how much the twist didn't work, because they probably wanted the blow up, but the blow up was actually pointed at them because it was production's fault.
Yeah, look, I think that six person save was very different to my one. My one was
Other than the numbers, there is a parallel, but it was very different.
See, I actually would have preferred it if she had my one, because then she could have picked and choose for specific reasons why she was saving people. And then she could have really, you know, weaponized it. In saying that, just by circumstance, by the rocks that were drawn before that particular challenge, it was weaponized to the extent where someone big essentially was going to go.
Mm. Yeah, I think as well, we said that last week, like that advantage that you had, it was more of an active advantage. Again, you got to individually choose. She was just kind of picking a side, and again, picking a side where she would be immune. It almost had nothing to do with the other people. Like, you could pretty much just see it as, do you want to be immune or not? And I think that's what a lot of the players would have seen it as, because no one would have made a different choice. And then some people will come along for the ride with you, and some people will have it reversed. And I don't think that they would have blamed her for that, because they would have just seen it as such an obvious choice, which it was.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think in a million years there's a scenario where Erica doesn't smash that hourglass. No. It's like, why wouldn't you? Like, you're at the stage of the game where the only thing that matters is being immune. She's been outcast for 2 days. She has no relationships. Why would she go back for a post-immunity challenge, pre-tribal scramble with no friends and no immunity? It's like, of course she was going to smash the hourglass.
And she says that to Ricard. She's like, I didn't know what the dynamics were and how much time we would have. It's like, yeah, that's so fair. Like, no one's going to be mad about this. So production got the moment they wanted. They got the slow-mo hourglass smash. I hope that it was everything they wanted and more, because I honestly thought those first 2 minutes were like the most stale part of the whole episode. And then it got so dynamic with like all of the strategizing. But I did think it was funny when Jeff's like, Erica, tell the people what you got. And she's like, all right, well, I got to go back in time. Like, it was just like very casual to see, like, and they're like, oh, okay, that's what 41 is. Now there's time travel involved in that. And then Jeff kind of has to step in to explain the mechanisms of what time travel actually meant. So,
and now JD's waiting back at camp.
Yeah.
Money.
I got to go back in time, and here are all of the other players, and also here are players from other seasons. Drop the four, keep the one. They're probably happy that it was only what it ended up being, like, instead of bringing back. But in terms of like some of the other mechanisms that we saw in this episode, knowledge is power. It's finished.
What did you think about it? I think knowledge is power is incredibly powerful. Hence the name. It just needed to be used for the certainty. So if you're going to use a knowledge with power, you pick off someone like Nasir's idol, because you know Nasir's not playing their idol. It's in their pocket or backpack. Actually, here's a question, because I haven't frozen the screen cap of the advantage. What happens if Nasir had left his idol in camp?
I don't think they know what happens if Nasir left his idol in camp. Like, I think that's an unanswerable question.
Do they have a TV moment where they go, holy fuck, we can't hand it over from Nasir? They probably do, don't they?
I don't know. I don't think they know. I don't think they have an answer to that question.
I don't think they would have thought about that one. US producers, if you're listening,
they are.
Get your shit together for season 43.
Yeah. But, well, that's another thing with knowledge is powers. Like, everyone's like, well, I hope I never see it again. I'm going to put my bet out there. You will 100% see it again. Firstly, it did provide a great moment in spite of itself. It was only because it got leaked that it ended up being so fun. I think Rob vocalized it so well on Know It Alls that in a different world, poor Xander is just getting it stolen from him without even knowing it existed, and that's not what happened. The players made it a great moment, and circumstance made it a great moment, but even if it hadn't been a great moment, we'd be seeing it again, because I often forget this, but the Nullifier was brought back after Dan, even though it felt like it wasn't a good advantage, but was a great moment. Then it actually screwed Janet, which no one enjoyed, and then I forget this, even though I just rewatched Winners at War, but they did bring it back for season 40, and Parvati just never got to use it, and that was after a deflating moment with Janet. So had this gone well or not, I think they're bringing these things back. I think we'll see knowledge is power again. I'm very happy that now that it's out in the universe, unless it comes back next season, which wouldn't have seen this season. now everyone could kind of reasonably assume that at least something like that is out there, but I still think it could lead to deflating moments. I still think that it disincentivizes people making things public, and we saw this episode how fun public things are. So I don't think it's a good advantage still, but I'm glad that the first time that it happened and no one knew about it, people found out, and then they couldn't at least use that thing of this unknowable advantage that would have been so hard to watch and felt so unfair. Like, at least we avoided that, in saying that it might come back for season 42 and they hadn't seen it yet. So we'll see if it continues to be unfair through the next season.
I just think if I'm the situation where I'm Xander and I have my advantage just taken away from me, I would feel like that is the most grossly unfair thing ever.
Mm.
Particularly given that advantages are literally being handed out here when you go for a walk up a hill. I think if you find something, there's some kind of like fairness about it, where it's just out in the bush and you have the opportunity to be proactive. And whether you're openly looking for things or whether you're sneakily picking up firewood or going to the well and then you're sprinting up and down hills to find stuff, at least you can have some kind of positive action when you find an advantage. But like, oh, I flipped the thing. I've got this advantage just handed to me. Yay, I'm going to use it. I think it would have been a shit go for Xander, but was it a bad advantage overall? No. Is it essentially the same thing as an idol nullifier? It essentially is, Shannon, if you think about it.
There's some similarities. Yeah. It's the evolution. It's like the Pokemon evolved form of a nullifier.
The only thing that would really excite me is using this to pick up an extra vote, and that extra vote being the deciding vote.
George, the extra vote's never once what you think that they're still the extra vote, and then that would be epic. That would be an epic way for the extra vote to finally work.
If I ever come back, Shannon, that's my only objective,
to
aside
use the
from
extra
winning.
Vote correctly.
Steal an extra vote and then play it in a casting vote.
Yeah, in a format where we don't always get extra votes in AU, and we've never had a knowledge is power type advantage. But yeah, see, they would have to then create those advantages, and you'd have to be playing again. But if you can pull that off, I will go back to this moment, and I would just love that. We will play this clip.
Please flag this for future reference.
Yeah, that would be amazing. With finding things and going to the missions, like, Liana gets it through. I mean, Shan needed her vote, it's true. But then Liana does have the social capital there. But I do agree, like, Xander's not going on that mission because he's already been on a mission. He went on the first one, which we praised at the time. We were like, wow, look at how trusted he is that they send him on the first mission. I think Dino gave him chizzy points for that in the first episode. And now he's been blocked out of going on another mission, which would give something much stronger than an extra vote in the knowledge of power, which could screw him out of an idol that Liana also had the chance to find, but he found instead and sacrificed for. So I do agree that, yeah, you'd be taking something away from an easier way to get it than the difficulty that Xander's had. And somehow Liana's advantage is easier to receive and also much more powerful. It just does make sense from a game design perspective.
And here's something controversial for the listeners at home. I, for that reason, wasn't completely opposed to the concept of fire tokens, where you can buy an advantage at a certain price or barter your fire tokens for something else. At least you've got some kind of positive action being taken to get the advantage, as opposed to, here you go, thanks for going up the hill for 2 hours.
Mm. No, I could see that. I think that if they had just been able to like work out a real currency for it, it's something that I would have enjoyed. At least, yeah, it would have made it kind of objective and make sense across the board, which is now, it's now like finding things, but also some mission things. And it's most of the time an extra vote, but now there's a random time. It's the most, you know, powerful advantage in the game. There was just like no objectivity to the way things were being found and what was being found in the season.
So do you know what I hope happens in one of the few remaining US episodes? I hope they have a grueling, exhausting mission where they go up and down the hill, almost like they did at Winners at War on Exile Island forever for 12 hours. And the next minute, Jeff Probst, he pops out and he says, got nothing for you.
Probably will, because the game's a monster. Like, that's the game is a player. The game will manipulate you. The game will take away things that you earn. If anything, they'll go up and down the hill. They will get something, and then Jeff will just come and take it out of their hands because, you know, as Deshaun says, he's like, the way Deshaun was cracking was hilarious to me. Like, at first, he's like, all right. And then by the end, he's just really like, okay, well, it's the game, but there's a very big chance that I go home here in like really, really difficult circumstances. And then he makes it through. But just like the way that it was wearing on him, it was funny for me to track through the episode.
Shannon, I lived through Deshaun's trauma with that Danny Power vote. Me just, I'm like, Just smile, George. It's tribal council. You don't want to look miserable. And then you're just going, fuck, 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 in the back of your mind. What's happening? What's happening? And now there's a fire challenge. And I'm going, this is great. Andrew's going to win this.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't.
He doesn't. How much can a person take? I also love that this used to be a G-rated podcast and that's like out the window. It's totally fine. And I wanted to ask your opinion as well on Shot in the Dark. We got to see the first Shot in the Dark played.
I love the Shot in the Dark.
You love it? And is there any time in your game you would have used it? Maybe, I guess, probably at the Kara going to Braun vote, right?
The only time I would have used it was then, because every other time I knew I was good. Mm. If I don't have any issue with a Shot in the Dark being there, I just don't understand how it works from like the production angle.
No one knows, George.
What happens if Sydney's safe? Do they have a double elimination in the next episode?
It would just be like an idol, so the next number of votes would go home.
Ah, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But I think we got some clarity in this episode because Jeff's like, well, now it's 2 of 12. So I think before we were like, okay, if two people are choosing, are they both choosing between the same 6 scrolls or do they kind of all get 1 and 6? Now we know that it was always they're choosing from the same 1 and 6 because now they're choosing from the same 2 of 12. I just have questions like, is it now 2 of 11 because Sydney used it? If Sydney had gotten Shot in the Dark, would it now be 1 of 11? Like, does it replenish? They just like casually were like, now it's 1 of 12. It's like, oh, you think we understand this? We don't. You have not explained it well at all. And there's not even notes about it that we could pause on because it's just like this verbalized thing. So, you know, things were answered and then more questions were created.
I think you play it only if you are 100% sure it's you. And in Survivor, you very rarely know that. At the Kara vote, I knew that, but I don't know. I think it's something that should stay because at least it has that little bit of excitement at the end of the episode. If you know you're getting a boring episode, like if I think back to my season, everybody knew Georgia was going home in that episode. Mm. Like there was not a single discussion other than Georgia going home. I know they try to make it look like Kez was interested in something else. No, trust me, she wasn't.
God. Yeah.
So like in that episode, if Georgia walks up, plays a Shot in the Dark and saves herself, that's exciting. As a player, that's shit. But it's something interesting for the audience, at least to wait for if you know you're going to get a mundane episode.
Mm.
So I'm not opposed to it, but you would only use it in that very unlikely situation.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is interesting. And I like that Sydney played it. Like, I thought she, you know, she took her shot. I don't think she was ever voting for Abby. I don't think it mattered. And she's talking at exits about how her vote didn't matter a lot. They knew that they didn't have the numbers. And I'm like, yeah, made sense. And she took her shot and at least she was trying something, you know?
Yeah, I know. Because, hey, if it works, she's safe and she's got an axe to grind in the next episode. It would have been fantastic.
Mm, it would have been good. My question is as well, what is a less exciting TV moment? An urn that you have to stand up to see what happened or just like unrolling a scroll? Like surely both of these could have a little bit more drama behind them.
I think the most dramatic thing is the host just flipping over a vote. Like why couldn't Jeff go, Sydney, you've played your Shot in the Dark and now I'm going to pull it out of the box. And then he goes,
safe or not,
not
safe.
Safe, you yeah, know?
The like, gravitas of Jeff doing it like, rather than Sydney just being like, here we go. Yeah.
Look, the urn, like, wasn't a fan of the urn, FYI.
Yes.
But I think the urn could have been like those gender reveal ceremonies where yes. It's like, green, you're safe, and the smoke just
yeah.
goes.
Yeah. Smoke has been a bit of a winner with the urn. That's what people have. We should have had smoke. There should have been smoke there.
Like, I couldn't see the scroll. Every time the urn got smashed, I was like, what happened? Just act like you're happy in case they stay.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was actually thinking of the urns in this episode when Danny was insulting the twist, and I was thinking about that, how that whole week everyone was just vocalizing how, like, well, we wouldn't make a big move because of the urns. And I was like, the self-own of production, there was, like, some parallels there with this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, if there's one thing I hope I never, ever see again, Survivor Worldwide, it's the urns, Shannon.
There's a lot of things I don't want to see again. I've got a list, obviously. But I really am still loving the season, and I thought that this was such a great episode. And I feel like we still have questions, but we talked through a lot of the strategy. And I spent, like, a lot of the last 2 days trying to work through the layers of, like, but he knew that she knew. Like, that's where my mind has been. So I've appreciated having this time with you to just, like, talk it out and kind of try and get some clarity on that episode.
And look, there's a lot of stuff happening. You know, I think as long as the audience at home is generally, like, entertained, that's the main thing. 41's been getting a lot of heat. I've seen all the comments that it's too woke, there's too many game-changing twists, it's not Survivor at its essence. I'm looking at it and telling myself, I'm entertained. That's all that matters. In a market where, you know, some reality TV shows, particularly here in Australia, aren't doing as well as they used to be, Survivor's reinvigorated itself overseas. And do you know what? It's a pretty damn good season. The cast is fantastic and it's delivering.
Mm, I agree. I'm enjoying it. And I obviously enjoyed Brains vs. Braun and Immunity Island so much. And I really like when I was thinking like, wow, those merge episodes, we've got some great ones. I was like, you know, sometimes you have those moments where you remember that Survivor was off the air for over a year. And then you like get a great episode where like I was like buzzing on Thursday night after I watched it. I went to sleep at like 3 a.m. and I was thinking about the whole episode a lot, you know, and it was so much fun. And I think that sometimes I have those moments where I'm like, oh yeah, we didn't have this for a while. And now we do. And it's often great. And it's sometimes infuriating, but mostly I've had like such a good time with Survivor this year. And it's just great to be back.
See, I had a similar experience. I got home at 3 a.m. on Friday morning and then watched the episode at 6 a.m. when I, fun fact, Shannon, I still go to bed when the sun goes down and wake up when the sun goes up.
Sounds brutal.
So, if I don't go to bed when the sun goes down, I just wake up when the sun goes up. But
yeah, I didn't wake up at 6 a.m. That's the difference between me and you and those stories.
Oh, you're gonna miss all the action if you ever play Survivor, Shannon, early on in the morning. That's when that's when the real conversations happen.
That's one of the main reasons I'd never play. I mean, there's a thousand reasons, but one of the things is that like Survivor as a game punishes sleep and as an edit punishes sleep, and I love sleep. So I would never I choose sleep over Survivor, I really do.
Well, I feel terrible here. What was that season two first boot called in Australian Survivor? Joan. The one that slept too much?
Joan. Yeah, poor Joan. Like, Joan. That as well. Like, any single time you're going to go, I've talked about the, like, curse of the nap edit. Like, someone will sleep probably for 5 minutes, and if you're going home, they'll show it, like, 10 times, because how dare you close your eyes on Survivor?
Exactly. And the key answer to how did you sleep last night is very, very badly.
Yeah. Well, should we get to the chivvy and award some of these players in such a dramatic episode of the show?
Absolutely. Let's go for it. How exciting as a chizzy runner-up.
Yes, now you get to give your own points. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right, George, so you are still working out your points. I'm going to give my points here. I'm going to give 3 to Deshaun for a lot of the reasons that were given earlier in the podcast, but good reads on pretty much everything that was happening. He was right to be paranoid because it wasn't going to go well, and then he really read what was happening with Sydney well as well until they kind of all came to the consensus, led by Shan on the split vote. So great reads, the necessary sacrifice of Sydney, some really, really great self-preservation there. Throwing out the Evie info, which we think might have actually had an impact in terms of Xander playing the idol. He just worked so hard to make it out of this alive, so definitely 3 points for me. I was super impressed with a lot of that. I will give 2 to Xander as well. I mean, it's really hard to attribute credit to the Yasa 3. We don't see really anyone kind of come up with the idea as far as I'm aware. Like, we just see it happening in a flashback, and it also probably just makes a lot of sense to hand the idol off. Like, once you know about the advantage, that just kind of makes sense to plant the trap, which Xander does very well, gives information that he's going to play it for Evie, and then obviously shift it and bluff right there and give it away. I think Tiffany was a great choice to give it to. The fake idol was clearly brilliant. Like, he's doing a lot of practical things there in selling that, and he worked very hard for the idol to get it to this point. So I thought that was amazing. I would have given him 3 points, but I just took a point off for telling Danny the info, which could have given up the lead had Liana taken that information advantage, but it all worked out. And again, with reading implicit immunity, either he really did read it wrong and got lucky in my perspective, or it was his prerogative, or a bit of both. So I won't take too much off him there, but I'll give him 2 points. And I felt really, really good about Tiffany last week. I gave her that point. I think that she was instrumental in this whole thing. The fact that they even had that information from Liana to me was key, but I feel like I gave her the point for that last week to reward that. So had I not done that, I'd be giving her a point here, but that's rewarding that part of like her part of the plan in Yasa there. But I will give a point to Danny. As you talked about, his name not coming up when Deshaun comes up is a big deal. He had no protection. He's a huge threat, and his name still didn't come up. He continues to reach across the aisle where Xander got that information out of Xander on the other side of that. While I criticize Xander for that, I really have to commend Danny for using that relationship to get that information. So I feel pretty good about those points. But yeah, definitely a big tick to the Yasa 3 in general. But I feel like Xander, I think rightfully kind of is like representing that and will get the jury credit for that and has done a lot practically to really get that over the line. So I have to give 2 points to Xander there. So that's my 3-2-1. And George, where are you going with it?
Well, this is exciting. I've always wanted to read out Australia's results at the Eurovision Song Contest. So
this is more a Brownlow thing, but I like that you went to Eurovision.
This is the closest that I'll get, Shannon.
Yeah.
I will give 1 point to Tiffany because I think she's become a real conduit in the game. Like you mentioned, she's starting to really come out of her flesh, come into the fore. She's trusted to the extent where she gets an idol handed to her, and she's at a point where she's in a real pivotal position, and being there at the merge stage of the game is great. I will give 2 points to Deshaun. I think his reactionary instincts in terms of foreshadowing the shit that was about to hit the fan, very, very good. I think he's someone that doesn't rest on his laurels. He can turn the situation on a dime. And for the first time this season, I've been very, very impressed by him. And he definitely is one to watch out for. And the 3 points I give to Twapapula Xander because, oh, God, you know, I did a French course. I spent $2,000 learning French last year, and that's all that came out of my mouth. But I give Twapapula to Xander because the one thing that I value most in Survivor is control. Xander, I feel like, was in control of this episode. He was in control of the outcome. Was it absolutely flawless? No, you can never be flawless out there in those harsh conditions. But he led his minority out of the group. He didn't lose a number. He created a fake idol. He kept his real idol. And he's just a badass who has really, he had a bit of a lull when he, you know, the idol wasn't activated there, but he's someone that I'm really looking forward to for the final 5 or 6 episodes of this season, Shannon. Yeah, and that's my 3 points.
Yeah, I think those are really fair points across the board. I mean, Deshaun and Xander tie the week and then Danny and Tiffany get one each. And I think that's a pretty good reflection of the episode. Like Deshaun and Xander, I think, really like stood out as main characters. But we know that Danny and Tiffany were doing a lot right as well. So the charts are now Shan continues to be ahead on 21. Deshaun has jumped up to second on 11. And Xander has gone to third on 10. We now have Danny up on 9. Evie on 9. Ricard on 9. Liana is on 4. Nasira's on 4, Tiffany has gone to 3, Sydney left the game on 2, and Jeannie and JD left on 1. So those are the charts. Very interesting, because Shan hasn't gotten now in 2 episodes, where she was getting a lot, obviously in the first 5 episodes. She's still like light years ahead, so it'll take a lot to catch up. But I think it's definitely mathematically possible, so we'll see how that goes.
Look, I think Shan is someone that clearly has been the main character of the season, and then it does reflect in the cheesy points. And then at the end of the day, Shannon, she's gotten out there, she's made moves, she's demanded things, and she's someone that, you know, is front and center, and that's what you need to do when you go out there and play Survivor.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes now for, like, you know, with the fallout from this vote will be very interesting. But we also have some questions from the listeners. Jeremy yes. Hamilton asks, if someone on the outs had a hidden immunity idol but no close ally to hand it off to, could they defend against the knowledge's power by just playing the idol early? The precedent was already set in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers by Ben. Do you think production would allow this in the current era? So Ben played this was very contentious at the time, and this wasn't even with all of the conflicting order of operations that they currently have, but Ben played it and was accepted and authenticated at the beginning of Tribal Council, which made everyone kind of have to work around it. For me, if they never should have even allowed it then. And if they would have allowed that now, when order of operations has become so important to Tribal Council and there are so many different mechanisms, that would be terrible. Like, they definitely should not allow that.
It's interesting. My understanding is that you can only play an idol at a certain time. Maybe that was a tidying up exercise in the rules after that incident in like you refer to by Ben.
Yeah, I hope so.
But
I think that was just more than Ben was the anomaly. Like, I don't think that it would count now.
Well, we did have that Kez anomaly, and I'm hopeful that that also results in a charting up incident with the rules.
Well, it's not going to, I'm not sure that it will in AU, but LaRue has said that you can't pass things off in South Africa. So possibly those dual experiences in South Africa and Australia at least affected in South Africa. But if you ever play AU again, I think you might have to watch out for it.
I'm thinking this. In a hypothetical world, the moment you sit down, you whip out the idol or you wear it around the neck like I did and Russell Hance did, and you say, I'm playing this right now. Is there anything wrong with that?
There should be.
Should there? I think that's okay.
No, I think that the order of operations, like, it matters a lot. And we even spoke about it with your urn idol, about how that could affect the order of operations, that it can't, for example, trigger an idol train. And I think that's very important. I think, like, when things are said that you do it at certain times, like, yeah, you should be locked into that, especially when they all affect each other. And I don't think that you should be able to play it early anyway. And I think that if it would then give you a loophole, an incorrect out around another advantage, like, that wouldn't really be fair. I think the stuff matters.
It just adds a different kind of element. So the one thing that I was very cognizant of when there were multiple idols in play is don't play the idol unless someone else has played the idol beforehand. And that's that whole kind of like window of opportunity when you get asked to do it. But I'm more open-minded to that option than you are, Shannon, clearly.
Well, we'd be coming all the way around because the first ever hidden immunity idol was played like immunity. Like you did play it before the votes. You just had immunity. That's what Gary Hogeboom had. Then it became after the votes, the guard idol. And then they found the sweet spot, which was between the votes and the votes being read. And that is a sweet spot for a reason. Like, you know, you shouldn't be, I don't think that you should be able to get out of that unless it is a special idol like the urn idol, which has its own benefits because it wouldn't trigger an idol train and it could, you know, get one over on someone if they wouldn't allow people to still play idols after it comes out of the urn. So I think it needs to be a specific metric. Like, you get the Tyler Perry idol and you can play it at a certain time. I don't think that you get to just decide when times are played, when certain times are written into the rules and change based on different types of idols. I don't think that you can make it up yourself because, yeah, then what's the point of even having rules at all, really?
Well, let's put it this way. If the final part of that question was, can you pass on the idol at that point? How about we just never pass on the idol ever again?
Yeah, maybe we won't have knowledge as power, but I really do think that we will. So we'll see. I don't think they'd allow that personally. And Haley last week wanted me to ask you, I kept this in mind, because, well, we asked her, like, who would you play Blood versus Water with? And she said you, but then she thought you might say Kara. And I feel like we need to get the clarity on this.
So I, as in like a relative or just a former
Okay, relative, who would you do? And then also from the Survivor alumni.
So in terms of a relative, I think I would go with my sister because the general consensus was that she's hot and maybe she could be the hot shield that I use as a sacrificial lamb and get rid of her at a certain point of the game.
That's nice.
So that's you, Pam, if you're listening. In terms of a player from my cast, why do I always have a moral dilemma between Queen Haley and Duchess Kara?
Make a choice.
Oh, God. How am I going to make a choice? I made that choice last time. Who would I pick? Do you know what? To even it out as a universe.
Let me put it to you this way, George. I think only one of those people might be listening. So maybe you should make that choice.
To even it out in the grand scheme of things, this time I will stick with Kara.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah, maybe not the person listening, but possibly. And that's the choice you made. I was going to say, you brought up the idol part thing, and I've always said that the way that they should avoid that is that whoever gets voted out should go through a trap door if they're going to do something after they got voted out, like pass an idol or give information.
On Twitter?
Yeah.
I saw it, and I was like, this is amazing. I couldn't agree with more.
There was a clip. There's this new dating show in the UK that's called like Love Trap. It's a play on words. Brilliant. You have to figure out who the love trap is, who's like not really there for love. They're there for money. And if you choose right, they go through a trap door. And it honestly is like the best TV I've ever seen. It went viral. I'm sure people have seen the clip. And I was like, this is exactly what I meant. I feel so vindicated that this is an incredible production decision. People going through trap doors is really funny.
Look, I would be a strong supporter of this. We could also just put everyone in that cage that I lived through in the final immunity challenge and then just crush them when the votes are being
Yeah, that's more violent than I was going with. Yeah, you do the whole tribal council in a cage, and if you move one foot out of line, you're gone. You're out. Yeah.
And then you have the director going, no talking!
Yeah, and you'd believe it. You would listen. You would keep... No one is playing their idol early and breaking the rules then if they know that they could get, you know, squished by nails, I think.
But look, I think you solve...
production.
You solve the problem by just having a caretaker period. It starts the moment the host starts opening the urn, and the caretaker period ends when the torch is snuffed. And in that caretaker period, nothing counts except what comes out of the host's mouth.
Yeah, and if you try something, you're going through the trap door. It's a good idea. Find that clip. If anyone hasn't seen that clip of Love Trap,
please watch it.
Incredible television, should win awards, I think.
Do you know what I'm thinking? I hope the challenge producers aren't listening, because the thought of dropping like 25 meters into a very deep swimming area is also quite frightening for me.
That's probably what it's going to be like. The next final three challenge will be, yeah, some sort of endurance, and if you fail, you go through the trapdoor. And it would be great TV. It'd be hilarious. I'm into it. George, where can people find you on social media? As we've said, so much going on, the merch, Talking Tribal coming up. Like, people need to be following what you're doing.
Well, you can follow me on Instagram at King George of Bankstown. I am more active on Instagram than anything else. I also do have a Twitter at King George 2200. I do have merch available, so if you feel like you need some Macedonian Jesus in your life, please buy it. And I am available on Cameo. Very excited to be doing Talking Tribal. Can't wait to do it with you, Shannon. I think this is going to be a really exciting season of Australian Survivor, and I'm looking forward to seeing all the twists and the turns, hopefully not urns, unfold. Yeah. So that'll be really, really good. I know they're filming it up there right now, but it's something to look forward to. And I do have a few other TV projects in the works. So watch out and look and see what happens.
Wow, I'm excited to see all of that, George, and I'm excited for Talking Tribal. This has been so much fun to break it down, and I can't believe we're going to get to do that about every week of Australian Survivor as well. Like, yeah, this is really the start of something. How exciting.
It is. And do you know what? Long may it continue. Like, the important thing is this. We have Survivor coming future seasons here in Australia, hopefully in South Africa. I'm hopeful that that's renewed there, because that was a great season. We just watched season 8. More seasons of US Survivor. We've got 42, 3 and 4 coming next year and the year after. And it gives the opportunity for a very engaged fan base of super fans to listen to mediums like this podcast. And equally as important are the casual viewers at home who keep watching in their droves, who make sure that the seasons get renewed and that our favorite show keeps playing on our screens.
Yeah, a lot going on. And remember to subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, where we're covering all of that, all of the seasons you mentioned, international, US, obviously, and having fun with that. And follow me at Shannon Gates on Instagram and Twitter, where I post all of that content, including next week, where I will have another great alumni of Australian Survivor. It will be the great Harry Heels to break down whatever the fallout is from this dramatic episode. And I'll say as well, it's early in the month of November. It's a great time to become a patron, where Rob is putting out so much content. There's the Survivor Q&As. There's the 5 for 5s that he does with Nicole. It's a great community as well. There's going to be a Survivor Trivia Night coming up. That said, Rob has a website.com/patron. So make the jump. And we're always talking about International Survivor as well and all the things going on in reality TV. And yeah, just having a lot of fun with it, George. It was so fun to chat with you. And I just had a great time getting to hang out with you and talk Survivor.
Me too, Shannon. Thanks so much. And everybody, I just want to acknowledge once again the phenomenal job that Shannon does. Aww. She is the best Survivor commentator out there on our fantastic planet. I'm sorry if I offend some of your colleagues, Shannon, but it's true. You are. Keep doing what you do. You do it very well.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it a lot. I had a great time talking to you. Thank you guys so much for listening as well. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you next week with Harry. Bye.
Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
Losers. 21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give me the
swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Schkelling.
Million.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.